Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to my podcast, It's Anita Rani. Now, a couple of years ago, I made an incredible documentary about a place in Jordan called Zaatari. It's a huge refugee camp with 80,000 Syrian refugees living there. It was the most humbling, sad, and inspiring places I've ever been to. You need to watch the documentary if you haven't seen it. Basically, cut a long story short, because of that, I'm quite involved with the UNHCR and the plight of refugees. So I really wanted to interview a refugee for my podcast. I met this incredible young girl at an event called Maya Ghazal. She's 18 years old. She came to this country at the age of 14 and no schools would take her, even though she was one of the brightest girls in her very middle-class world in Syria. But in this country, none of that mattered. She went from school to school to school until finally she met somebody who realised her potential. Now she's studying aeronautical engineering, she wants to be a pilot for the RAF, and she's going to make you look at your own 18-year-old daughters and question what they're up to watching Netflix non-stop. Please enjoy it. She's incredible. And, you know, just see the beauty in basically being a human being and being able to fulfill your potential, because her story is so harrowing in so many ways, but also so uplifting. I'm in the UNHCR, which is very exciting, and they've given us a it's not that fancy actually. It's just an office, a meeting room with a nice fireplace and a map of the world. And I'm joined by the woman I'm here to see, Maya. Maya, how do I say your surname?
Ghazal.
Ghazal. Did I say that right?
Yeah, that was so correct.
What does Ghazal mean?
It means deer.
Deer.
Yeah.
As in my deer, or as in the animal, a deer.
No, yeah, my dad used it in Arabic as the my dear thingy.
Well, ghazal in Hindi means it's a type of song, a ghazal.
Oh.
And it's one of my favorite types of Indian music.
Okay.
It's like poetry set to classical music.
Well, what you just said, like, it's also a type of poems in Arabic. So, like, they say it to talk about how beautiful their partner is and how they love the partner.
So it's an Arabic word then. It must be the same word, ghazal, the songs I'm talking about, ghazals, they are deeply, deeply romantic poems.
Yeah, that's it. That's the one, yeah.
Okay, well, we're not here to talk about romantic poems or what ghazal means, even though I'm very interested. We're here to talk about you and how remarkable you are. I met you briefly just before Christmas at the Ai Weiwei refugee film launch. And I met you really briefly because you were a superstar that night and everybody wanted to talk to you. But I knew I'd get my time with you. Yeah. So, Maya, I just want you to tell me about your life. You are 18 years old and you are Syrian.
Yeah.
Tell me when you came to the UK.
I came to the UK in 2015. I was just 16 years old. I left Syria when I was 15. And we spent about 40 days in Turkey with my grandparents from my mom's side. And then we came to the UK. And that's when my life just changed and everything like began. And so
there's a lot to unpack there. So let's first start by which part of Syria did you live in? Where did you live? Where did you grow up?
I'm from Damascus, Syria, the capital, and I grew up there. And the neighborhood which we used to live at was filled of family members. So like we were from my mom's side, like her cousins and her aunts and everyone lived in that neighborhood. And yeah, we were a very big family, and especially like everyone had like very big homes. So like each weekend we used to like, we go to someone's home and everyone brings food and all. Yeah, I had loads of cousins, great cousins and great aunts.
Can you count how many members? How big is this family?
So my mom had three sisters, each with three children. And we were in similar in age. So like my cousin is the same age as mine. And my brother, and I have two cousins who are the same age as my brother. And then two cousins the same age as my youngest brother.
Was it a lot of fun?
It was a lot of fun. Like,
describe describe Damascus to me. I just, on your life and what kind of life it was like. And just give me a day in the life of Maya in Damascus growing up. What kind of place was it?
So it was that kind of place where it wasn't very big.
Quite modern.
It was quite modern. Also, you could find places where you see traditional stuff, and like it had varieties of places where like sometimes you just wanted to go to a cafe with your friends, have a bit of drink, or like maybe like just talk around, or you want to go to shopping centers, big ones with different food destinations, or you just want to walk around traditional places, get very old rings and bags, handmade stuff. So a day in my life in Damascus was, it depends on the day. So basically on Thursdays, I go with that group of friends from my school. And then on Saturdays, I go with another group of friends who are mostly all boys. And then on Sundays, I go to another group, with another group of people. My life was very filled of just going out and spending money. That's what it was like.
Who provided the money? Did you have a part-time job, or was this dad's money?
No, that was dad's money.
Dad's money. Of course it's dad's money. Good-looking boys?
Yeah, you can say so.
Because obviously, I mean, it sounds like a normal teenage life.
Yeah.
Right? Sounds like a happy teenage life.
It was very normal. It was very ordinary. Just different groups of friends going out and family. And that's all what I did. It wasn't anything special.
Well, and then what happened? So tell me what happened when the war broke out. How did all of that change?
So I was on sixth grade. And
so how old were you?
I was... I think 12. Okay. Yeah, I think I was 12. Yeah, I was 12 and my brother was 1. Yeah, I remember that because it was like he lived only 1 year in Syria with no war, and then the war broke. So he was 1 year old and I was 12. And I remember when it started, we were in school and we were like all standing when we say the national anthem, like every Thursday. And we were just had a chat with my friend and we were like, oh my God, did you hear what happened? Do you think that will happen anymore? And we just take it easy, like nothing happened. Okay, that happened. It will stop. We never thought that this will get that big. And then stuff happened. Like get worse and worse, and electricity got cut out, and we had to buy a generator, and then we had to buy another generator to like to provide us with electricity for our home. And then fuel couldn't be like you couldn't like we couldn't get fuel very easily, and it was getting very expensive, and everything was getting very expensive.
And what did your dad do in Syria? What were your parents' jobs?
So my mom was a photographer, and my dad had a small shop in the center of Damascus. It's like a traditional place with the, yeah, it's like a traditional place. And he had also a manufacturer, he was like a tailor to make clothes, traditional clothes.
So you had quite a comfortable life.
Yes, I can say that. We used to go out every Friday with my dad's family, and we go to one of the like the expensive places in Syria and in Damascus, and then every like Friday night we go to that very expensive shop that had like Snickers and Twix and Lion and stuff we don't have like in central Damascus.
All the imported stuff. So yeah. When this happened and you started losing your electricity, that's what I'm trying to see. That's why you could afford to get a generator.
Yeah, it's like, that's how it happened. The first one, we shared it with my uncle because my uncle lived in the same floor as ours. So because we needed a big one and he had a big one. And then we, my dad and him, they both shared the costs for the fuel and everything.
So how bad did, how quickly did things escalate? So you lose electricity, generator one, generator two, then what happened?
And then no water. And then that was another story because my mom had to go up to the water, to the water reservoirs and then to check the water level and if we could afford someone to take a shower or not. And it was winter and we didn't have radiators in our home. Even if we had, they would be useless because there was no electricity and we can't like turn on the radiators without electricity or in the generator. So we had like from this old stuff that you put fuel on and then you turn on the match and it's fire and then from the fire you get heat. Yeah, it was very old.
And do you remember what it was like? Do you remember the kind of what your parents were going through? What do you remember of that time seeing your mum and dad and the fact that your mum for the first time in her life is now having to go to collect water? Yeah. You know, that there's no heating for the children. I mean, what was it? Yeah. Can you remember?
My mum still talks about it, how she was feeling like it's something that she couldn't control. My mom hates when something she can't control, and especially it's regarding to my, like, at least my younger brother. He didn't really live his life in the beginning. Like, and they couldn't provide him with the stuff as they provided us with when we were his age. He came to Damascus in a wartime, so she felt very sorry for him, and like, she still tries still now to like to recover for him and like tell him how Damascus was. It's not what he saw. And it was of course very stressful, like with my dad going to central Damascus, and it was very dangerous, it was risky, and my mom going to work. Well, it was something good that her work was very near from our home, and she used to like she used to work with my aunt, so we could reach them both.
So what about going to school? Because you were 12 when war broke out. So were you still able to go to school?
Well, yeah, because I was 12, that's true. But it didn't break out in Damascus in the beginning. It took too long until it reached Damascus. I was in... Oh, no, it was just 1 year after. Yeah, well, I was in seventh grade when... when it started coming to Damascus and getting more involved. And I remember I missed loads of days in school. And my mom enrolled me in the school because it was good. It was near and then it was good. So these are the specifications that she looked for in going to school. And it was very risky and dangerous. I wasn't able to go every day, and some days they just text us and just say, well, the school is closed or it's surrounded by army. So we couldn't really reach the school. And sometimes we just leave half time. So
at what point, when did somebody make the decision that it was time to leave? I mean, time to leave the only home you've ever known.
Well, I think when the year after, in eighth grade, my mom had to change the school for me, and I went to a further school. It was like further from our home, but that location was known to be safe because it was surrounded by like the government army. So it was supposed to be safe. And my dad's factory, was kind of lost and dropped, so he didn't have a point where he could like tailor and make clothes anymore.
What happened to the factory?
Because the factory wasn't in Damascus, it was in the suburbs of Damascus, so it was bombed and then it was stolen from, robbed, and
it was bombed.
It's not like because of the factory itself, but the area was bombed because, like, the suburbs of Damascus were very filled of the against the army. So
your dad had lost his place. He'd lost his business basically because it was bombed and the soldiers had moved in and it'd been taken over. So what? So do you remember a conversation that took place between your parents?
I remember. So basically, that factory wasn't only my dad's; it was also my uncle's. It was my granddad's factory in the beginning, and then because my granddad passed away, so like all my uncles now, they were.
It's the family business.
Yeah, it's the family business. Not all of them, but yeah, like my dad bought from my other uncle, so he got the stuff. So yeah, I remember not affording really to go with the car, and then the car wasn't like we didn't have a car, but then we couldn't afford that many fuel, and especially with the generators and fixing them and then the water, and then we had to buy a special pump for the water to reach our house because we were in the seventh floor, so it was high up and the water didn't reach, and then we had to buy a pump to reach the water, and the water wasn't clean, and then we had to travel to get clean water. Yeah, it was very messy. So my dad eventually said, my dad's sister, she went to Egypt with her husband went, and then she went as well. At that time, Egypt didn't need a visa for Syrians. And then my dad said, well, I will go up there and I will try if I can find a job. Or like my aunt's husband told my dad that you can find a job for yourself.
So he decided to go to Egypt.
Yeah, it was the safest in the beginning. And because my aunt was there, so he thought that we won't be... Somebody. Yeah, and my dad is not only a tailor, but he's also an electrician, and he is a handyman. Yeah, he can paint and do loads of stuff. So he went there.
Sorry?
Yeah. Okay? So he went there to Egypt, and he said that the place wasn't suitable for us to go there, like because he knew us and how he was really working hard to keep us on the constant providing for us.
Yeah, so you're used to a certain sort of lifestyle, a certain standard of living. So maybe your dad thought this isn't the place.
Yeah.
So when did he decide to come to the UK?
He returned back to Syria. And he was like, well, I will try again and I'll try to get like other factories to provide the shop. And so that didn't work quite well because, as you said, we used to have like a different lifestyle. And because my dad, he used to work in Saudi Arabia before, and he used to work in Qatar and then in USA. Like he traveled to loads of places just to provide us with not the best home, but just the best standards of livings, and he always wanted us to feel like we're special. And
of course, because he's your dad, he's providing for his family. So when did he decide that the UK was where he should try, and how did he get here?
In ninth grade, that's when I did my GCSEs. He was discussing with one of his friends. One of his friends was in Sweden, and they used to talk a lot of Skype, and I used to join the chat because I was so excited, I needed to know. And that friend kept persuading him to tell him, like, and letting him know that Sweden is a very good country, and he needs to go there, and, like, they provide good stuff for Syrians, and you can, like, provide for your family. And then his friend got his family to there, and my dad looked and he was like, oh, his family are living happily and they don't have to worry about the stuff anymore. And I know it was hard for my parents to send us to school and to provide us with, like, just to keep us in track with our normal...
Safe.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd lost everything. Your dad lost the business, you'd lost electricity, you'd lost water, you couldn't go to school.
It was very hard, and... it was risky and dangerous, and the area where we used to live at, it wasn't the safest. We always, like, faced risks of bombings. And
so how did your dad get to the UK?
So basically, he was supposed to go to Sweden. That's what I knew. But then he was like, no, I won't. And then he started discussing with my uncle, the one living in the same floor. And they both said that they will go to Turkey and they will try again for like a living for us. We didn't know that how stuff were happening or how it will happen. He didn't tell us. I wasn't that much informed. And like one day he just left to Turkey and even my uncle didn't go with him.
So your dad just upped and left?
Yeah.
To go to Turkey. Did he get to Turkey?
He did, because it didn't need a visa at that time. And my uncle stayed.
How did he get from Turkey to the UK?
So then recently I knew the full story. He went to Turkey and then from Turkey to Greece, walking. It's either walking or by the boat. I'm not quite sure because I remember like days he doesn't answer on his Viber, days he just not online on his phone.
He would have gone by boat, I think, from Turkey to Greece, no?
Yeah, probably. I think
so. You're not sure. So you're not sure.
I'm not sure because the
And then he eventually got to, so from Turkey got to Greece.
Yeah.
And then he
told me that he was like in contact with smugglers and so, and to get him to Sweden. That was the plan eventually. But then he ended up in the UK.
So he didn't quite make it to Sweden. No. It's very cold in Sweden.
Yeah, they changed the direction.
It's fine. It's very, very cold. They're very good looking and they've got a very good dress sense, but it's very cold.
It's very cold and very hard language.
Yeah, very hard language, yeah, exactly. So your dad went through this epic journey, made it to the UK.
Yeah.
You, your little brother, your mum, you're still...
And other brother,
you're still in Damascus.
Yeah.
So how did you get here?
So basically...
I want to get to your story. Like, this is there's so much to talk about. But actually, the point about when you get to the UK and what you've done in your own... Your young life is amazing.
At that time, I was doing my GCSEs, I was saying, and my dad was in the UK when I was doing my GCSEs, the final exam, and I kept telling my mom, I'm not going to do my GCSEs while I'm studying. It's either the world will end or we will go to my dad. Why do you need so? And why
either the world's going to end or we'll go to see dad, so I don't need to sit my exams. I've heard of a lot of excuses to try and get out of exams, but that one I've never heard before. But you were in a very... unusual situation.
Yeah, my mom kept telling me that, no, you will do them, and no, you will do them, and it will take long to go to your dad, and our visa will take too long, so you have to study for them. And I did study for them, and I got very pretty good grades. I liked my grades.
What did you get?
In Arabic, I think I got C.
That's great, considering you were working... through a war, studying through a war. And
well, in maths I got A star, and in science I get A star, and in English I got A star. In French I got, I think, a B, because...
You smashed your exams. You smashed your exams. Well, we know you're incredibly bright. We know that, and I'll tell you, and I know why you're incredibly bright, but that everyone else doesn't know yet because we haven't told them your story. So you got your visas. You got visas to come to the UK.
Yeah.
And then how old were you when you got here?
So basically the visa story is very long.
Give me the short version.
We went to Lebanon first time to give our passports. And then apparently the lawyer in the UK sent us wrong. No, he filled the paper. He sent us correct papers, but he filled them in the wrong way. So he filled the location wrong. So he was like... Beirut, Syria, not Beirut, Lebanon. And when we get to the embassy in Lebanon, in Beirut, they were like, well, they're not accepted. And you've been...
What a nightmare.
Yeah, I know. It was very bad. And
so then did you have to come back to Syria?
Yeah, we returned back to Syria. And then
reapply.
And reapply. And my dad had to pay to the lawyer twice.
Ugh. He sounds dodgy.
Yeah, I know. And then we had to return back to Lebanon and give them the passports again. And I think the risky thing about all of this is because it was snowing at that time and we went by car, like a driver drove us, and it was very expensive at that time. It was snowy and we had like to go at night, like at 3 a.m. in order for us to catch the appointment. And then the second appointment, we missed it because on the Lebanese borders, they didn't let us in. even though that we had the appointment and papers and everything was legal, and we were like, we don't want to stay there. We just...
Do you realize you need to turn this into a book? You need to write this story. But so in the end, did you get your visa, and did you fly to London?
Get our visas. In the end, we went to Lebanon again. My uncle drove us, and then we went from Lebanon to Turkey, so my mom could see her grandparents. And my dad was applying for Red Cross to get for our expenses to fly. We would have paid for the expenses, but because we moved all our house, my mom took care like everything. Like she took she took like literally everything,
including the kitchen sink.
Yeah,
you know that phrase, yeah, right?
That's what I was going to say. Everything, including the kitchen sink. She didn't miss anything. And
where did she take it all?
Why or
where? Where did she? With you in the car?
Yeah, in the car and
Turkey.
To Turkey, not in the car to Lebanon, and then from Lebanon in the plane to Turkey. So we paid for extra weight because my mom didn't want to leave anything.
Of course. And then from Turkey,
we stayed 40 days.
And then flew
to Birmingham. So like I got my 16th birthday in Turkey, and then 20 days later, I went to Birmingham. It was 27th of April.
What did you think of Birmingham when you landed?
So when we landed, it wasn't something that was fluently because we stayed in the airport for an hour. They took our passports and then they took us and they got our stuff and they started asking us questions and if we're truly Syrians. And then I broke down and I started crying and I'm like, am I not gonna see my dad and are you going to send me back? And they used every English word which I had. These two,
if you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
They weren't cops. They were something else. I think airport security. And yeah, they literally just use every single English word, which I knew. And I ended up like, I don't know any words. I don't want to see my dad. So eventually they let us see my dad.
So at first they didn't believe that you were Syrian.
No, they questioned us and questioned our story in my dad's factory and where was it. And we had to explain with our very little English, especially because I was out of school for 40 days. So
how much English did you have when you were 16? You've landed in Birmingham.
I had very little. Because it's true that I learned in school, but then I still don't know if it was American or British English. And I'm not sure that they corrected the mistakes.
You're considering you have been in the country for 2 years, your English is amazing. Because this is the point of your story, which is what made me think, I've got to talk to you, is that when you got here at 16, it was really difficult for you to get into school, wasn't it? Tell me about that.
So I had my GCSEs from Syria, which you said I smashed.
You smashed it.
You smashed them. A stars, smashed them.
A C in Arabic, but don't worry about that.
So I actually, like, I had them and they were translated to English because my mom said, well, they need to look at something. And I tried the first school and they were like, what were those? And I'm like, these are my GCSE, like full book. In 1 month, like in 1 week exams. And they were like, well, we're not sure. What do you want to do? And I'm like, I want to do political science. And then they looked and he was like, oh, well, that's a bit hard. You have to choose five subjects, you know? And I'm like, five subjects. And I didn't know what five subjects. I did 12 in Syria. I'm like, oh my God, what, five subjects?
So this is for your A-levels.
I think that was for A-levels. I'm like, well, they asked me for my GCSEs and I give them my GCSEs from English, from Syria. I didn't know what were GCSEs. And they were like, well, we will think about it and we will...
So how many schools turned you away?
Four
schools.
And college. And college was our last choice. My mom wanted me to carry on in school because I was just 16 and she knows that I'm very childish, so I need a school. So
schools and a college said no.
Yeah.
Because they didn't think that you could. Why did they say no?
So one of them said, we're very sorry. They posted me after I think 2 months. They were like, we're very sorry, and but we're not sure about your about your qualifications, and they won't meet our standards.
So who took you in? Because obviously somebody did take you.
Yeah, somebody did take me in after like very rejections. And I was like, I just need, like, if you could test me and check my qualifications, check that I know something. And like other schools, they were like, just go and see your council. That was the meanest. And and college didn't answer.
But somebody took you in.
Yeah, eventually, by our social service person who used to come to our home and check on my brothers, how they're doing in school, and my mom and dad, how they're doing in college, and me doing nothing. Eventually, she was like, well, we will try a learning center for you. And I stayed there, I think, for 2 weeks because it was in the end, I think it was in the end of July. In August-ish. So it was like the
summer.
Yeah, it was summer, even though that I was in England from April. And that what happened. And then I stayed there for 2 weeks and I met a very nice girl. And she was like, well, you need to do your GCSEs. And there is a nice college my sister goes to and they understand people. So she told me that. And she was like, you can go to an open day. And I was very excited. I'm like, an open day? What was an open day? I had no idea what is an open day. And I took my two little brothers and my mom and dad, and we were fasting. And I was so excited. I'm like, let's go and see the college. And because we were just new in Birmingham, so it was quite far. It was like 20 minutes away. And we thought that it was very far. I'm like, I hope that this college will be worth it. And it was very big. And I went there. And I was very tired, and I spoke to the teacher directly. I didn't speak to some kind of advisor or principal or someone who doesn't know students. I spoke to the I spoke to the teacher directly, and I told him that, well, I have nothing to do, and I just want to study. And I
want to learn.
Yeah, that's what I told him. I told him, like, I want to work hard, and I'm very free, and I have nothing to do, just to study. I told him that, of course, not the same grammar, not the same accent, but yeah, I did manage to give him this idea.
You managed to communicate.
Yeah.
You come across as a very, very good communicator. I can imagine that you managed to get your point across. And did the teacher listen?
He did listen.
What's his name?
His name is Robert Butler.
Butler. Do we love Robert Butler?
We do.
Robert Butler, you're awesome. And Robert Butler said, yeah, come.
Yeah, he was like, well, we will give you an exam. And from there, we will say which level you could be in.
Okay. So that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You joined this college.
Yeah.
And now let's get to only 2 years. Just remember, let that sink in. Maya has been in the country for 2 years. She came here at 16. The way you got here, remarkable, horrible story. Really horrific thing that you've gone through.
Very positive.
Very positive.
Very happy story.
It is a great story. And now, what are you doing now?
Now?
Yes.
Okay. So now I speak with the UNHCR, the first thing I say.
Well, what are you studying?
Well, I'm studying aviation engineering with pilot studies in Brunel University.
Okay, let me repeat that. Aviation engineering with pilot studies at Brunel University. Can we just have a high five?
Yeah.
That's amazing. 2 years ago, four schools and a college rejected you because they didn't think that you'd be able to study. And now you're studying this an engineering degree at Brunel University.
Yeah, my mom told me to get the acceptance letter and to go to these four schools and tell them, you see what you missed.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
You must, what, I mean, do you think about, how have you worked so hard in the last 2 years? Or I mean, tell me about how hard you've worked to get to where you
are. Well, of course, the first year for me, like, in the last, like, 2 years ago when I first started college and I did that engineering course and I did three GCSEs and English GCSE, even though that my teacher, he was like, well, I don't think, not Robert Butler. He believed in me. He helped me to go into English GCSE. But like some teachers, they were like doubting me and they were like, well, we don't think you can do English GCSE. It's too high for you. I know I didn't pass from the first time, but I needed to learn. I didn't pass for a reason. I messed up questions and sources. I would have passed. I took a B in my mock exam. So I really did work hard in the first year. English language and the whole English barrier and the engineering part and everything was in English. I never like got to that point like where everything is literally in English.
Yes.
It was so funny actually that even like that there was a language barrier, I had a very small notebook and every new word which I heard, I wrote it, but in Arabic letters. So even though that I didn't know how to pronounce the word, how to spell it, what does it mean? I stood up and I asked questions and it was so funny. I still can't remember that on the first day I wanted to ask questions like what were assignments, but I didn't know how to pronounce assignments. So I held up my small notebook and I'm like, assignment? And everyone's listening. I'm like, yeah, what was that?
And good on you. Good on you to just get up and say, you know what? I don't know, but I want to know. So I'm going to ask the questions. I think most people would just sit back.
Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to persuade.
You're a force. You're a force. You did not take no for an answer.
Yeah, I think that I didn't. That's what I try to persuade all my friends that, well, if you didn't speak up, if you didn't try and spoke what you know, you won't know what do you know. You can't really assess yourself and see what you need to improve.
And there are good people who are willing to help. Even if four schools and a college back said no, good old Robert Butler said yes.
So you say
so yes. Only take, this is what I say all the time, right? If you're applying for a job or you're doing whatever, just go for it. It's a numbers game because you only need one person to say yes.
Yeah, you only need one person to give you hope.
Give you the chance.
And he did.
So why are you studying engineering? What do you want to do?
Aviation engineering. So basically, I will get my pilot license years from now. Yeah, I think 2 years or 3 years from now. And I want to work in the airport, probably. And Mr. Robert Butler, who was so excited when I got accepted in Brunel, he was like, you should go for it. But he didn't want, like, he didn't just tell me, go to Brunel. He wanted me to think about it and to really see like, well, I see myself there. And I wanted to do medical engineering in the beginning of my engineering course. And he supported me for that. But then when I had the idea for aviation engineering, he was like, well, yeah, you can embrace it in here. And like most of the times I'm like, I tell him that, oh, I should have done political science and I missed not doing that. And he was like, you can do it as a hobby.
Which you are.
Yeah.
I mean, you're very political because we know you've done something remarkable recently as well. You went to Parliament because you want to be a pilot, right? You want to be a pilot. That's, I mean, amazing. Who doesn't want to fly?
I know. I mean, fly high in the sky.
Yes.
Soar, Maya. Just get up there and go as high as you can. Because your politics has become your hobby because you went to Parliament recently.
Yeah,
like just when everyone is listening to you talking, going, this girl is so inspiring and she's only 18.
But it's
I done the Parliament Day. She was there.
Tell us what you did. Cause I mean, I know that you went to Parliament, but no one listening knows. Tell me what happened. Why did you go to Parliament? You made a speech in Parliament, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And that speech was so amazing because I embraced it. Like, I didn't have a paper. I didn't write anything down. And I felt very proud of myself on that day. It was like a session to discuss about family visa reunion and how much it's important. And I wanted to speak up about my own experience regarding expenses or like the lawyer stuff or like the borders in Lebanon. There is no cooperation between the embassy in there and the borders. So it was very hard. And like, I knew other also difficult stories of people who couldn't bring their parents, even though that they were child refugees, but they couldn't. And like,
so you went to Parliament to talk about uniting families, refugee families who have half of their family in one place, half in another, to bring them together.
Because it's something very important. Because without the support of my family, it would have been very, very, very hard for me to reach anything that I've reached now. Like now they moved from Birmingham to London just for them, for us to stay in one house and for mom, as she said, to cook and do my laundry and just look after me. That she wants, because it's family support. And the person who's in a different country already left their home country and their home and their friends and everything. And like, it's just the least that they can have is their family with them.
Do you feel like you've been, like, what's your experience been in the UK so far? I know you were turned down from all these schools and there's a lot of talk at the moment. I mean, I think the UK has taken 10,000 Syrian refugees. Yeah. There are 5 million around the world. So you are 5 million displaced at the moment. And for such a wealthy country, we've taken 10,000. Do you feel welcomed here? Do you feel like you could make this place a home? How do you feel about being here? Do you want to go back to Syria? What's going on with you?
So I feel very welcomed in here. And I feel like I'm lucky that I got here. And I'm lucky also. I feel like I'm very lucky comparing to other people. And that's why I feel like I'm advantaged. And I think I need to speak up about other people who feel like very sad or hopeless, or they just want someone to help or someone to give them hope. I think
how do you feel about Syria though? You know, this is your country that is now, you know, you've had to leave your parents. It's still in a terrible situation.
It's very sad. It's very it had happy memories, and I still remember my friend's birthday was yesterday, and I saw that most of my cousins and all my friends, they were all together and they were celebrating. And I felt bad that I wasn't in there. I felt like I'm missing something. But then I looked at what I have and I wish they can have the same. That's all I can say. I can't share it all with them because eventually I know what they're facing and how they're living and the, like, how standards they're under. So regarding living in the UK, it is my new home, I think. It is my new home. Like, I'm building myself in here, and I changed a lot since I arrived to the UK. I arrived, I was 16. I was still a child. I was just 16. I was still a child, so.
I love that you keep saying that. I was still a child. It was 2 years ago. You're 18. I mean, you're a young woman. Absolutely. But you've only been here 2 years. I'm so excited because you've done so much in 2 years. You've mastered a new language. You've studied your socks off. You've got into university. You're doing this great engineering degree. You're learning to be a pilot. In 2 years, you've gone to Parliament, you're twice to encourage our leaders to think about uniting families. So you're being very political as well. You waste no time. My goodness, if you can do that in 2 years, what are you going to achieve in the rest of your life, Maya?
I'm in their Royal Highnesses as well.
Oh, hang on a minute. Yeah. Royalty as well.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you've not met Meghan Markle, have you? No, I'd love to meet her. I'd love to meet her. Okay, one day. I'm going to podcast Meghan one day.
Harry.
You liked Harry? Oh, no, Harry's off the market. No. I know. Heart's breaking all over the world.
No.
I know. Everyone loves Harry.
Ginger prince.
Oh, he's beaut. He's a beaut.
Yeah,
everyone loves Harry.
And like, he's a pilot as well. He's in the Royal Air Force. yeah, Royal Air Force. Yeah, yeah. So that's one of my aspiration to go to.
Have you seen Top Gun, the film? No. I know you haven't. Of course you haven't, but watch it. If you're into pilots and you like a man who can fly a plane, then okay. Watch Top Gun.
Okay, Top Gun, Top next Gun. Watching list.
Yes.
Okay.
Get Top Gun out, watch it with your mates at uni, and then get back in touch with me and tell me you didn't love it. What's the future hold? What are you excited about now?
I'm excited about working more with the UNHCR. I am excited with the opportunities which I'm receiving from the Diana Award organization. I'm excited to keep also spreading the message of a charity called the Children's Society, because they took me in at the beginning and they are who developed my speaking skills in July 2015. I used to go to one of their like youth clubs for refugees and migrants. I didn't go that much, but then they took me as a speaker and they trained me and they gave me opportunities and they nominated me for the Diana Award, and the Diana Award introduced me to the UNHCR, and everything is connected and they started it. So
I feel like you're going to give so much back to society. I feel you've got so much to give. You're an inspiration and you're a role model and you're so young. You really are. You've inspired me today. I feel like so lucky.
I feel like I'm old. I'm getting old.
Mate, you're not old. Let me tell you, you're not old. I mean, listen, we're all going to get old. That's inevitable. It's what you do with your time, right?
I'm 19 soon.
When are you 19? Amazing. Yeah, don't worry. Listen, don't worry about getting old. Look, here you are, the most positive person. You're worrying about turning 19. It's almost embarrassing. You've got someone much older than you sitting here. Don't worry, you've got nothing to worry about. You've got the world at your feet. You really have.
I'm very looking forward to the future. I think 2017 was a very great year for me. Coming to the UK was a very great, a huge chance and opportunity that I got. And my dad and my parents, everyone sacrificed a lot for us to reach here. And I'm very grateful for everyone, for all the supporters. And that's how I want to give back, that, well, I'm helping the community as well, as some people did help. It doesn't take that much of great work or great effort. Like me getting, for example, recognized, or someone smiling at me or telling me that I did a great job, or like, oh my God, you're so young to do all that. That just made me think, well, I need to do more, and I don't want to get old. I want to do more. And I think that's one of the things that I also, I don't want just to give back to the community, but I want to tell other refugees, and not only refugees, migrants, newly arrived in this country, everyone who thinks they're so hopeless and they have nothing to do, or like all the doors are closed, that there will be a chance, there will be a saving guard for you one
day. You'll find your Robert Butler. There'll be a Robert Butler for everybody.
There will be a Robert Butler for everyone.
Well, Maya, I cannot tell you how much I've loved talking to you. You've utterly inspired me. You are a role model for young women all around the world and in the UK. You have done this podcast. I am now going to officially crown you a Rani's Rani. My name is Rani. Okay. Rani means queen. Okay. So you are a Rani's Rani. Oh, you're joining a very elite group of women.
Great.
And men. There will be Rani's who are men. Is there a favourite song that you have that you listen to a lot? Have you got...
Well, a song that I listen to a lot.
When you were in Syria, were you into pop music or?
So when I was in Syria, I used to listen to English music.
Yeah. Who did you love?
Bieber. You can't count on what I was in Syria, because I was like very childish. And
okay,
Robert,
what are you listening to now? Then give me a song.
Now I listen to very random songs. I like blues and I love. I play the guitar, so I like these stuff.
Of course you play the guitar. When do you have time to learn to play the guitar as well?
And I'm learning Russian and French.
And she's learning Russian and French. I feel like the most inadequate person on earth right now. Oh my God, I want to get out there and do something remarkable.
I like the word adequate. I heard it first in Jane Austen stuff.
Adequate. Or I just said I feel inadequate.
Yeah. I know.
You like the word adequate. Yeah, it's a good word.
It is a good word. And I like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Very good.
And nincompoop.
I didn't come into this one.
I love the word nincompoop. means you're an idiot. Not you. You can use it.
You can use gobbledygook.
Gobbledygook, yeah, when someone's talking nonsense.
Yeah.
Oh, you're learning all the good stuff.
I am learning the good stuff. I'm Googling them.
And flibbertigibbet. Flibbertigibbet.
I read this one.
It's a Yorkshire phrase. I think it means somebody who talks a lot, because I'm a flibbertigibbet. I think
and
you're
flibbertigibbet. Flibbertigibbet? I am
perfect.
A flibbertigibbet.
You are a flibbertigibbet. I'm a flibbertigibbet. You're also a Rani's Rani. I utterly adore you. More power to you. Go forth, conquer the world, and, you know, just inspire wherever you go. Shine wherever you go. Come on, hug it out. Let's do this. Thank you so much, Maya.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.